Well, like I said, after a while I started watching BBC, and I actually wound up being a really boring boy. I watched the BBC News, and not just the little half hour that they broadcast on ETV every night. But I got, well, that was boring, so I turned over to ITV, and that got to be boring. And so a lot of the British television shows are like game shows and aren't really all that good. The best are incredible. But I tell you, there was one that I just thought of. I don't know about ETV would not air it. Was I, Claudius, which was of the Roman Empire, which was done in the late 60s, early 70s. Man, oh man, I was pushing the envelope on television, not so much as graphic, but suggestive, about the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And I watched a few episodes recently, and I went like, well, they got away with that back then. But, of course, not in South Carolina.
Yeah, I, Claudius, somehow was one of those who was a bit controversial. And I imagine in a lot of the less liberal parts of the country. Okay, well, I've got BBC News something on. The women's football team, I don't know, who cares?
Simpsons episode, I forget which one it was, that Homer had to go to the soccer game, and he hated it because it was back and forth and back and forth. He didn't like it until they got to fight in the stands, set the stadium on fire, and then he went, woohoo! You know? So, and that's another thing about Tom Baker. He's made at least a half a dozen appearances on The Simpsons, and they call him a significant figure in television.
Significant picture in television. What movie did I see him in where he played Rasputin? Was it Nicholas and Alexandria, or was it something else? He was a good actor overall, generally.
He did, he was Rasputin, and then he was the evil sorcerer in The Seven Voyages of Sinbad, which had the real hot gal, Carolyn Monroe, which she was like the Raquel Welch for British movies. And after he did that movie, he hit rock bottom, kind of like William Shatner did after original Star Trek. They found him as a day laborer on a construction site. There were a whole bunch of older guys that were going to, they were considering to replace Pertwee with, and number three. And the guy said, well, no, you got to see this Tom Baker. We need a little younger guy, but weirdo. And he said, well, where is he? We can't find him. He said, well, we know where he is. So they went and found him pushing a wheelbarrow. And so he went in and tried out, and he said, I was tired. And I just read it like I was the doctor. And they went, brilliant. And so 7 years later, he finally decided to call it quits. You know, the longest running contiguous doctor. And still probably the most iconic and remembered one.
Like I said, something about that Tom Baker look. It's intense, slightly crazy, mischievous. You know, he had the right look for the doctor. You know, plus that scarf and that hat and whatever. He just, he captured the oddness of the character probably a little better than most of the others.
Roger that. Now, you were talking about old companions. The one he had, remember the native, the wild woman, Leela? I met her, Louise Jameson. And she was quite an interesting person. And she's done some stuff on, been on BBC TV. She's been in that Doc Martin program, which is about the autistic guy who just can't get along. You know, he's of course high spectrum, but lives in a little village on an island. She played the wacky mother of his future wife.
Louise Jameson, the, yes, you know, she dressed in, she was the primitive, dressed in the animal skins. Yeah, she wasn't a bad-looking woman back then. And that was usually one of the reasons to tune into the show, is see which babe the doctor is with this time. You had a decent babe count back then.
You know, one of the episodes, they actually got her to dress up a little bit. The Talons of Wen Chang was really one of the best episodes. She had the giant rats living in the sewer, but that was one of the better, like a Sherlock Holmes 1850s episode. And, you know, the whole setup of that, that was one of the best episodes. And I think she left shortly after that. I think she decided to move on. The doctor went back to Gallifrey, and she found a feller she liked, and she decided to stay with him. They talked about bringing her back. She's still not half bad looking today, even though she's in her 70s. But the one companion, and unless you've seen the old episodes, the Hartnell episodes, is Susan Ford. Carol Ann Ford, that plays Susan, his granddaughter. And she's in her mid-70s, but, you know, holds it together real well. And the school teacher, Ian, Ian Chesterton was his name, but his real name is Ian something. He's still alive and still doing television. He's like 94. So, they actually used him in the BBC 50th year special, a place in time or something like that. He had a little cameo in that, and he was 91 then. Ian Russell, that's his name. He's still alive.
You know, this I don't know all that much. Most of my memories of the original series are from the Tom Baker era, which is why, to me, he's usually the first one I think of when you mention the Doctor. So, you know, those are probably most of the ones I saw. Those are most of the ones I remember. And, you know, then again, no one paid attention to the series until it came back in 2005. I mean, you've always had your hardcore Doctor Who fans, you know, like the ones I mentioned who went looking for the old 60mm prints. So, you know, the show did have a really good cult following. But as I said, its greatness was in its apparent badness. I say apparent. You know, it's like, this is the best you could do? Well, you know, it is the BBC, so what are you expecting? Star Trek or even Lost in Space, it isn't. Well, no, actually Lost in Space was dreadful. But, yeah, it wasn't a series that had a lot of time. I don't know how much of a buzz it had then.
Well, it was showing in Canada, and I was going to ask you, even though you're way down there in the city, if you ever got any Canadian broadcasting channels that would sometimes skip, because I know folks right up there on the line in Buffalo started recording it on, they would take a reel-to-reel recorder and an 8mm camera or even a still, and they were to record the soundtrack coming over the CBC. And that's how some of the audio has been used in the restoration animation where they fill in the episodes. But they started watching it when that Patrick Trout guy was in. The guy kind of looked like Mo Howard from The Stooges a little bit. Or like a Charlie Chaplin type character. He had some great stories and introduced the the Ice Warriors and some other people. Oh, I was going to tell you before I forget it, I didn't mean to keep you on this late, but it's fascinating talking to someone who's followed the history of television, as you have. About the Daleks, the guy Terry Nations. I wound up meeting that guy, actually, at a science fiction convention, of all places, in Greenville. And he was known for creating the Daleks for Doctor Who, as a lark, as the stupidest creature ever, or villain. But later on, he went over to ITV and introduced, worked on The Saint. In fact, he is responsible for introducing a very young Roger Moore to British television. And then later on, he worked as an advisor on the original MacGyver show. So he was there. And, you know, dry wit, hilarious guy. But I used to go to those conventions in those days. Yeah, I was a super geek. But the one in Greenville was kind of like science fiction on steroids. It was a huge party. In fact, we got asked not to come back after a few years. By then, the Hilton Hotel. Let it drop for a second. They picked me out because I was dressed up as John Pertwee. I could actually fit in a velvet tuxedo. And I had the white wig, and if you've ever seen him or a picture of him, you'll know who I'm talking about. And they said, you, come here. So we want you to be a fan judge. So they picked some other dude out. I forget, he was some super. They take us to a room and said, you're going to be the fan judges of the talent contest. And lo and behold, who do I wind up with? I have Terry Nation in the room, George Takei, and Yvonne Craig, Batgirl. And I'm sitting with all three of them. And, man.
Green Orion's slave lady from one of the original Star Trek episodes. And aside from that, I'm trying to remember. Mars Needs Women. Was that the title of the film? Some other, you know, B-movie. No, when you started to mention Canada, could I get signals from Canada? From the New York City area? No. From upstate? Maybe. But, I thought you were going to say something about Canadian science fiction. I found episodes recently of something, of a show I'd seen maybe once. You remember a show called The Star Lost? Starred Keira Lay from 2001. It was written by Harlan Ellison. It was an absolutely dreadful show, but the concept was actually an interesting one.
I vaguely remember Star Lost, and you're right, it was a dreadful show, but you know what Harlan Ellison's problem with? Well, I'll sum it up. Harlan Ellison was a good guest, for the most part, at the science fiction conventions. And, of course, he contributed a lot to the original Babylon 5 with Michael J. Straczynski. You know him probably as much for that show as you did He-Man, the Barbarian, and She-Ra. But anyway, Harlan Ellison was a consultant on the show, wrote a lot of scripts. And, of course, he still had a beef with Star Trek because he ran the, or wrote the story that had Joan Collins in it when they went back to the past, sitting on the edge of forever or whatever it was. And he claims he never got the proper credits for that or accolades or whatever. But the biggest problem with Harlan Ellison was his guest fee. You had a choice of back then paying him $10,000 up front or take care of his bar bill. If you were smart, you went for the flat fee because he would buy rounds for everybody in the whole hotel and on your tab.
$10,000 or settle my bar tab. Which of those could be greater than the other? With Ellison, possibly the latter. But, yeah, he didn't get credit for a lot of maybe what he should have gotten credit for. And for anything but maybe the first or second episode of The Star Lost, he probably didn't want the credit. I think he wrote under the name Cordwainer Bird or something. Even I don't want my name on this crap. But the premise of the show was interesting. The show takes place on a multi-generational starship, which has been en route from Earth for, three or 400 years. And it was designed as a series of domes. Each dome represents one particular Earth culture or Earth civilization. And Hugh DeLay's character comes from this farming community called Cypress Corners, you know, which is like, I guess, the Amish section. And he ends up one day discovering this hidden tunnel that leads to this transport tube somewhere, and over the next 15 or 16 episodes ends up visiting all these other cultures and all these other domes with some sense of urgency, I believe, because he finds out early on that the ship is actually on a collision course with some star that, you know, the guidance system is off. So if they don't get the ship back on course, if they don't find the bridge, if they don't figure out how to operate the ship, there's going to be no ship within a year or two. But that's an interesting problem, is after all these many generations, does anyone even know that they're on a ship? How would these cultures have diverged and evolved in all this time? So it's an interesting premise, maybe not so well executed. You know, especially when you have George Takei, Chekhov. Who played Chekhov on the original series? When you have him as a guest star, dressed in some outlandish, there were 16 episodes, I never managed to get through more than half of them. But, you know, interesting concept, possibly better execution.
Away for a second, I had to check on one of the critters here. That was Walter, it looked like Koenig, but he pronounced it Koenig, that played Chekhov. And I got to meet him a couple times. He was a super nice guy. And he was a guest star. He played a bad guy on the original Babylon 5. Played a member of the Psi Corps. There's still a big controversy about Babylon 5, who ripped off Deep Space Nine. Some people said Deep Space Nine ripped off Babylon 5. But, a lot of Trek people come over. Major Barrett Roddenberry, who was, of course, a computer voice, and I forget her character. The most famous one was Andreas Katsoulis, that played Tomalak, the Romulan on Next Generation, and a couple of other characters, but he was great as, I forgot his race, but he was great. And there's a lot of funny stories about him, about how stingy he was in real life. He lived with the character, they actually shared an apartment, because Andreas didn't like L.A. rent, so he said, can I room with somebody? I just need a place to crash. And his name was Jerry something. He played Garibaldi, the security guy who had a drinking problem. He would say this guy was so tight. I mean, he was a guy that would keep the bar soaked down. It was a little, just a puddle in the thing. And said if he went to the grocery store, he was checking his groceries, and he'd say, no, I paid for that. So he would just have the trash can all over the place, trying to look for the receipt. But he was a great character. And ironically, although they're all dead now, Michael Straczynski still held the rights, all the rights to Babylon 5. I'll let it drop for a second. Taking it back. He never sold it to a network, and so he said he's going to completely reboot it. But, you know, that show was done on an Amiga computer. Wasn't done on a Mac, wasn't done on a Windows machine. And so, yeah, the effects were good for the level of the Commodore hardware they had. But, of course, now they've got stuff that they can really do it well. Billy Mooney was on that show. Will Robinson played one of the boneheaded critters that lived there. And there were so many other folks that were on the other series. That I thought, and this is a cliche now, the best show that only lasted one season was Firefly. And they can never bring it back. They made a few movies to try to tie up loose ends, but Firefly was probably the best sci-fi program of the last 30 years.
Hey, quite frankly, I'm not familiar with the show. Although it almost seems like a ripoff of Farscape, which is a bloody disaster of a show completely. You know, I just turn it on because, well, you know, it's got Claudia Black. And the other one, little blonde sex doll, what was her name? But, yeah, there's an abortion of a show. Firefly, let me think. I'll look for it online. Maybe I'll find it. Yeah, it was only on one season, and it, like, vanished into obscurity.
That's what was wrong with it. It was on UPN, you know, which didn't last too long, until it became CW. And it was on Friday nights. The characters were perfect, though. It was really like a space western. It even had a western theme. But the plots were great. The characters were great. You had the captain. You had an absolutely drop-dead gorgeous gal who was a universal consort. Oh, and she was on Stargate a few times. I'm trying to think of her name. She's a Greek gal. Just absolutely gorgeous. Then they had a preacher who was kind of doubting his faith. Had a little tomboy gal who was the second daughter of Roseanne. I forget her stage name. And then you had a doctor and his really freaked out ESPN sister who did not, she was in another dimension mentally, but they had experimented on her. And there's actually a warrant out for her, an interspace warrant for the two of them. Because whoever experimented, they were trying to turn her into a weapon. Well, anyway, it was a great show. And the captain, he was trying to, he always stayed on the consorts behind for the choice of her career. But he really loved her. But anyway, it was doomed because of scheduling and the network it was on. But everybody, you know, they could quote you the script word for word. And they've asked the people, can you come back? Unfortunately, some of the actors and actresses have died. But they did make a movie that kind of tied up some loose ends. But Firefly was just, oh, man, it could have lasted 10, 15 years. Just from the premise.
I'll look for it around. Might be clips on YouTube or somewhere. Yeah, okay, that's one, I guess, that for the most part I passed on. But, okay, here it is. I'll look it up on IMDb. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's 12:30. I didn't want to keep you.
But talk about sci-fi and geek stuff all night long. The career of boy, we haven't even got into thriller theater. which was the best. I mean, Twilight Zone was cool. Rod Serling, his whole persona and what he brought to the show and the precepts. But the best show was Thriller that ran on NBC. And there were only 62 episodes, and it was right at the end of Karloff's career. But he starred in several episodes, but they had all black and white, soundtrack, everything. They spent top dollar on it. And that's one reason NBC canned it. Used to come on 10 o'clock on Tuesdays. But you can get all the episodes. At least they did save all of them. But there's one called Pigeons from Hell. And that is still a scary show to this day. And it may be on Tubi TV or Pluto or one of those. Which, by the way, Paramount Plus owns Pluto now. Go figure.
Pluto TV used to be on one of my Xbox consoles. So Paramount owns them? Yeah, well, now whose radio is beeping periodically? Is that yours or mine? I'm getting a series of three quick beeps. It's not on battery power, so it's not running out of power. Don't know what would be happening to it. There might be a timeout timer, but it's not cutting me off. I gotta figure out what the three beeps are.
Well, before we go, I gotta ask you, have you seen any of the season, the whole season of Paramount's Star Trek Strange New Worlds?
Like sex, I refuse to pay for television. That's on their subscription service, right? And there was that show, Star Trek Discovery. Well, actually, I take that back. I do have a subscription to Apple TV. And the only reason why is for that show, For All Mankind. And there's one or two others. But no, I don't have a subscription to Paramount, so I haven't seen it.
Well, I agree with you, and they're like $4.99 a month if you don't mind the commercials. There's only two shows that I like, and that's the American reboot of Ghost, which I've seen the one on British TV, which I still think is funnier, and Strange New Worlds. I cannot watch Discovery. I've tried three times to try to watch season four, and I can't tolerate it. Star Trek Picard was just a mess this year. So I was hoping, because of Anson Mount's, the Captain Pike thread, basically saved Star Trek Discovery second season. He was, not like Shatner. He was different, but he was fun. And so fans, if you know the story, fans saw, man, you need to make a spinoff with him. So they got it all together, and they did. And, of course, COVID hit, and whatever with that. And they had a little extra time to work on it. You will not be disappointed by Strange New Worlds. That show introduces some new characters and introduces some old characters with a twist. The Australian gal who plays Nurse Chapel, is just, oh man, she's great, but it's funny. And they do a different episode every week, so there's no, like, an arc. It is the Trek we've been waiting for since the original series. It is absolutely amazing. And I think most people are dreading the second season, said they're going to find some way to screw it up. They're just going to have to.
Getting a subscription of Paramount, streaming thing just for that. Okay, the three beeps are on receive, so it's not the timeout timer. Beep, 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 on receive. The radio's on a power supply, so it's not a battery thing. So what the hell is going beep? I don't know. I'll look in the manual. But, yeah, anyway, as I said, we could probably talk about this for another hour. But Oh, what, it's already 12:36 I have here. Probably not past my bedtime, but usually I try to get in bed not much later than this. Not that I really sleep anyway.
Hey, I know how that is. I don't crash till about the sun starts to come up in the morning sometimes. And it's just the way it is. I mean, I'm going to be up at night, whether I'm watching TV, listening to the radio, you know, whatever. I'm going to be up and down one way or another. I might as well enjoy myself because I'm going to be exhausted all day. And then it's hot all day, so I'm like a, you know, an old lizard, you know, or a turtle. I'm going to find some shady spot and, you know, finally wake up until it's a little later. But no, as far as the Paramount Plus, try to get one of those deals where you can watch it free for a week or a month and then just binge watch the Star Trek Strange New World. And by the way, that beep is my warp core breach warning here.
Warp core breach? I don't know. Sounds like it's coming out of my radio, but I don't know of anything that goes beep, beep, beep. There's a timeout timer that I'm sure is set, but again, that would be on transmit, wouldn't it? So, okay, the warp core breach. Well, you're going to want to look out for that, you know. Don't wait too long for the warp core breach.
Says is the antimatter is flow injectors are stuck or whatever. No, what it means is, Yazoo, you should have put a fan on the 2980Rs, especially when you hit the transmit button. I mean, I got a fan blowing on this thing, and honest to gosh, I don't want to put my hand on top of this thing. It's a coffee cup warmer right now. So I'm going to have to rig up a computer fan or maybe do one of those liquid cool deals, except, you know, I hope it don't short out the radio.
Yeah, and it may seem hot to you and me, but it's perfectly fine for the radio. You know, computers are like that. You know, the poor little CPU chip gets too hot to the touch, but you might have another 20 degrees to go before it blows up. This thing, this is an ICOM ICV8000. There's a fan in the back of it. Even when I key down for 2 or 3 minutes, it seems to stay cool. But now I had a commercial radio that was like that, and it got to the point where I found some place, some weird back connector that I could pick off 12 volts, and I had a little computer fan sitting under it. That commercial radio I should put back here one time, that Midland Olympian. You know, like, but maybe I shouldn't worry about it, because, you know, commercial radio is typically built like a battleship, and it has all kinds of safety features for people that are, let's say, not radio people. Oh, you shouldn't key down with an other antenna? I didn't know that.
See, that was like at my college radio station, when we went from AM carrier current in Columbia, which used the wiring system as the antenna, and every time somebody hit an elevator button, it was like, you know. So when that died, we went FM Class D station, maximum 10 watts. And we had a tube exciter. It was supposed to be the exciter for a bigger transmitter, but we found a way to broadcast binaural. And we went on the air in 1977 with WUSC-FM 91.9. That, of course, was the closest we could get to the commercial band at that time, before they came out with the LP-FM, that you could sandwich it in somewhere here and there. And we sounded like a really good AM station, but it was tube-powered, and it's amazing. We got two blocks, one direction. We had a stick that was about 165 feet in the air on top of one of the girls' dorms. And then it would go all the way to Orangeburg. Some dude had wrapped his room in wire, and he would go to all kind of lengths to listen to us. And I'll let it drop for a second. Did that.
was, and people went to just draconian lengths to pick us up, was because you had hard country and disco. And, man, we were playing all kind of crazy stuff. From Dr. Demento to throw it in to, you know, classic rock to classical rock to psychedelia. I even have found a record that was called Relaxation Music from 1954. And it was basically a guy playing a Hammond B3 organ and saying, "You will feel relaxed." It was self-hypnosis. And I would find a way, I'd crossfade, you know, Pink Floyd or something with it and just make a mess on the air of people. So we get ready to sign off at midnight. We start the phone and start lighting them. "Oh, man, don't sign off." "Okay, I'll stay a little longer." 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm about ready to fall over. I get ready to say, "Okay, WSCFM is licensed by..." I get a phone call. "I'm still up, man." So I wind up just putting on an album and passing out until the guy came on at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Is when you can stay up that late, not really, and then have to go to class the next day. So you're definitely transmitting that triple beat. It's not my radio, even though I hear it extremely clearly here. So that's the ASU radio saying, what exactly? My finals are overheating? Yeah, this one seems to stay cool. I should put that commercial radio back here and see how hot it gets. Because it got to the point where I didn't want to transmit it, let's say, what was it, 40 or 50 watts. I would stay at the 5-watt setting because it gets uncomfortably warm to the touch. But then again, you know, it may seem warm to you and me, but in some cases maybe that's fine. I'll set up that radio later and play with that one. I've actually got two of them. I've got a UHF and a VHF version of that radio. I was using... The UHF version was the one I pulled out of the taxi cab when I had the taxi cab. Some commercial radio made by Midland Olympian. They're not bad.
Did that one have crystals in it? KD4SRR.
Well, these are contemporary radios. You know, probably 10 years old. Less than 10 years old. No, crystals, man, you're going back to, man, I don't know how long. The old CB radios, it needed a receiver transmit crystal for each channel. So if you actually had the 23 channel one, you had a lot of crystals.
Well, what I was going to finish up, we were talking about heat, was that exciter that we used as a transmitter until 1991, when we went to 2300 watts. That was a weird kind of amount they gave us, 2300 watts. But anyway, then of course we went stereo too. But you talk about get hot. That exciter was something else, but you know it never failed. Even when we powered down, even then when we went off air, it stayed on 24/7 up on top of a dorm. And we had, one of the reasons we sounded like AM was not because of that receiver being, or anything we did to it. We were only paying for 27K, what was it, a 7,500K phone line to as the audio link. And talking about picking up noises in the background, we had the UPS, or UPN, and, the Associated Press actual teletype wire machines in the next room.
Well, your ready-made sound effects for your fake news report. You know, that and have some guy beating on his chest pretending to be the helicopter pilot. Yeah, tube-type transmitters, I don't even know if you can break them. Extraordinarily tough little buggers. You can overload a tube vacuum tube transmitter, I suppose. It's not easy. If you know, if the old civil defense systems didn't do it, then it's probably not easy to do. That was one of the advantages of vacuum tubes. You know, in addition to low noise and very high power, just very, very tough equipment. Hard to blow a tube.
Although that Zeta TV we had, 1951, they had it 3 years before I was born. It was losing tubes about every 2 weeks because Zenith didn't put adequate ventilation in the back of the set. And I think it was me that said something to Dad, well, why don't you just leave the whatever that Masonite back is off, because you can still plug it in. And I promise I'm not going to reach in the back of the TV set. And so he did, and then darn, the set lasted till 1963. But we were having to go to get the tube tester, and every week the tubes were breaking down. Didn't have too many board level components, believe it or not, that actually went bad on it. And it was an incredible TV. Talking about Charlotte, when they bought it, they paid $300 for that TV in $1951. And then they had to put a 40-foot mast with guy wires on top of the center chimney to pick up WBT Charlotte because Columbia did not have a television station. We temporarily had one called WCOS TV that was on channel 49, but nobody had the accessory UHF add-on tuner. In fact, we didn't get one of those until late 50s when Channel 19 went on the air down there. We finally decided to get it. By that time, 25 was back on the air, more or less, operating out of a Quonset hut surplus from the U.S. Army, which when they did a weather forecast, you knew it was raining because you could hear it on the studio. But I digress. Well, anyway, it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. I'm going to let it drop for a second. Throw my behind too much here. Just yakking and yakking and yakking on. But, hey, it's an art of conversation that, you know, we don't have the corner barbershop or the soda fountain at the drugstore anymore for a place for somebody to have a conversation like this. But this is a great thing that I hope that ham radio can bring back. So, again, a pleasure and honor to talk with you, especially on all the Doctor Who and everything. So, hopefully, maybe we can do this again. We'll come up with enough material, and we can rag on a little bit and get a few other folks to join in. So, I'll say good evening, of course, 73s, and have a pleasant night. This is KD4, SRR Robert, and Joanna, I'll be clear on your final.
KD4SR, KD2VNG. Yeah, we'll do this again. You know, this for me is, this is the most I've talked to anyone in a week. Possibly in a month. And I do mean the entire month. But, all right, I'm sure we'll talk again. And yeah, it's almost 1 o'clock. I should toddle off and go do something, possibly just let go lie down. Anyway, you have a good evening, 73, and good talking to you. It's KD2BNG, I'll be clear.
Before I go, just to let you know, talking about satellite, the West Coast feed of DS9, Deep Space Nine, is just now coming on Heroes and Icons. And I'll be watching Trek till 4 a.m. this morning. And then I switch over to another channel and I watch two episodes of Dark Shadows. And so when the sun comes up, I climb back in my coffin and sleep until dusk. Again, a pleasure and an honor. And have a great week and happy August 1st. Dog days are indeed upon us. KD4SRR, clear.